Today we have a special guest, harpist Ann Hobson Pilot. Welcome to Crossover, Ann Hobson Pilot.
Thank you very much.
A fellow harpist here, and one with a marvelous reputation, and continues to play and entertain audiences, and would be returning to Settlement Music School on Sunday, November 21st for a performance. Now, Ms. Pilot, you were harpist with the Boston Symphony for what, 40 years, was it?
40 years,
yes.
Exactly.
And I do remember seeing you, I guess, on some, perhaps some video things that they did with the Boston Symphony. But tell us a little bit about your background. Where are you from originally?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm from Philly originally. I basically lived there except for 4 years when I was small, and my father was in the Army, and we lived in Germany for four years.
Mm-hmm.
I began the study of the harp at Girls High and also continued at the Settlement Music School with Edna Phillips.
Yes.
Rosenbaum.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, I guess I would call her my mentor, because she was very supportive in my development over the years. And then I left Philadelphia I started at the Philadelphia Musical Academy also, and then went out to the Cleveland Institute of Music. And I graduated from Cleveland, and my first professional job was principal with the Washington National Symphony, where I was there for 3 years, and then my 40 years in Boston.
Well, that's really quite a plum that you had. After all, the Boston Symphony was, you know, one of the greats, still is one of the great orchestras. You are also African American, and this was a very, very big thing that happened when they appointed you. Was that you were groundbreaking, I guess, in your time?
Yes, exactly. Actually, my first professional job was with a national symphony when I was principal harpist there, and I think I was one of the first principal African American principal players, especially African American female principal players.
Yes,
in the
you had
country.
The whole. You really had the whole nine yards there.
Right.
I mean, you had to break a lot of glass ceilings,
right,
and
exactly.
And you, of course, have a very distinguished career and have remained, you know, one of the outstanding harpists of our generation, certainly. And did you retire from the BSO? Now is that?
Yes, I retired last year in 2009, so I was very honored that the Boston Symphony commissioned a harp concerto for me. We chose John Williams to be the composer.
Yes, I was very interested in that. I had read about that in your bio, that he had written it for you.
Yes.
What a wonderful musician he is. And,
he's
just
incredible.
Outstanding. Outstanding. And what a composer. And did you work with him at all on the concerto when he was writing it?
Oh, yes. He was very intimidated initially, at least he said,
yeah,
about writing a concerto for the harp, because the harp is considered a very difficult instrument to write for.
Of
but
course.
I said to him, John, who else but you? Because he has written such fabulous harp parts over the years to works like Schindler's List, and I mean,
yes,
just
of course, a
ton of harp parts. And so he took on the challenge, and I worked with him on it, and I think it turned out to be a wonderful piece.
Well, is that going to be available for other harpists in repertoire? I mean, is that published?
Oh yes. Well, right at the moment, it's published in the form of the harp solo with the piano reduction. The
mm-hmm.
orchestral parts have not been printed yet, but it's been chosen by the Israel competition in 2012.
Oh, that's wonderful.
As the one of the two concerto works for the final stage. So I'm very excited about that. John, of course, is very excited about that. And obviously the work, the orchestra parts will be published well before that.
As an aside, which we won't have on the show, but I was one of the participants in the first one.
Oh, really?
The very first Israel competition, and I could not make it because of a family thing. So,
oh, dear.
But I do remember Ben Chaim, I think that was the poem that was one of the things. But that's not going to be in the interview. But
okay.
In any case, so the Israel competition, of course, has really reached a peak in terms of its importance as well in the harp world. And I guess all composers, they're intimidated by the pedals. I think that's really what
exactly
knocks them out. They just can't figure out how that works.
Exactly, and I kind of understand that because it is difficult to figure out.
You know, it's funny. I remember starting to play the harp, and for some reason, I mean, you start with that basically almost immediately. So it's a whole concept that I don't think you really figure out the concept until you've already mastered it, because it's an automatic thing, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So now, once you will be, of course, performing in concert at Settlement, and your program, well, you've got some standards here. The first arabesque, the Pierre Impromptu, the Saint-Saëns fantasy, and it's a beautiful program. But what you have on here is the history of the tango, because I am an Astor Piazzolla fan, so I'd love to know a little bit more about that.
Yes. Yeah, we tried to make the program as varied as possible. I will be joined by Ty Murray, a wonderful young violinist, and you know, I'll be playing the kind of standard harp things, and then she'll be playing a more contemporary solo violin part piece by Isai.
Yes,
and then we'll be playing a very contemporary piece by T.J. Anderson for the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're ending with the Piazzolla. I love Piazzolla
music.
Oh my,
also. It's marvelous. It's interesting to hear what you can do. And if that's published, I'm going to run out and get it.
It is. It actually
really
is, yeah. There are four movements that are published in the History of the Tango book, and we're doing the first three.
So where's that available? Is that through Lyon and Healy? Or?
Yeah, I think Lyon and Healy is where I got it from, I believe.
Yeah. So did you have anything to do with the arrangement?
Well, only from the standpoint of, you know, I did make some changes to it. But basically, I think it's very well arranged. But also, I was so excited about playing these works that I wanted more. So I'm talking with a former harp student of mine, Michael Maganuko, who is a harpist and also a composer. And he was chosen by the USA International Harp Competition.
Mm-hmm.
He competed for his piece, won the prize for that.
Yes.
His solo harp piece. But I'm talking to him about writing more arrangements for violin or flute and harp of Piazzolla. So we may have even more.
Well, I'm going to be there cheering for you.
Yes.
Now, the world of orchestral music is kind of similar to what it's always been, but what is your opinion about the role of harp students in terms of where they should be heading? I mean, there's always the solo career, which is really very limited, I think.
Right. The solo career is limited. There are opportunities in chamber music and, of course, you know, shows.
Well, that, of course, yeah.
All weddings and all of that. Mm-hmm. I think most young harpists that are in conservatories would like to head for an orchestral job, but the opportunities are so few. But they need to have training in everything. They need to have the orchestral training. They need to have the chamber music. And nowadays, it's wonderful that they have an opportunity to learn jazz or improvisation, because that will, I think, increase their ability to get jobs.
Where is that available? I mean, I know that there are certain jazz, you know, places to go to learn jazz, but
right.
I was just curious.
Well, in Boston, we have
Berklee.
Very large, well, of course, Berklee School of Music, and we have a very large jazz department at the New England Conservatory and also at Boston Conservatory here. And Juilliard, your alma mater, of course, has a very large jazz studies program, too. I don't know if they...
But I don't know if they really teach harp. It's very difficult, jazz harp, I think.
Oh, I agree, absolutely.
The chromatics are just... You can't really do a lot. I think But right. There are some harpists that are valiantly going out there and recording, but it is very, very difficult, I think,
exactly.
because of the limitations of the instrument. But
exactly.
but you're on the faculty, of course, of the New England Conservatory of Music, right?
Right. I'm at New England Conservatory and also Boston University.
Yes.
And
yes.
then for jazz, the very famous Deborah Henson Conant is here, and she's on the faculty at Berkeley and also at Boston Conservatory.
I haven't heard her name in many, many years.
Yeah, she was doing quite a bit.
Yeah, she was the one that was really kind of associated with jazz harp years ago. And as I say, years ago, because the world has changed a great deal.
Right.
Do you have a large harp department there at the New England Conservatory?
Well, at New England, I have 6 students, one of which is a combined NEC-Harvard student. And I also teach a couple of other students from Harvard privately. And mm-hmm. then at Boston University this year, we have 3 students. Last year, we had 5, but 3 graduated, and we have 1 additional. We try to keep about at least 4 at both schools.
Yes. Any pearls of wisdom for new harpists?
New harpists that are
trying to have a career.
Well, the obvious one is practice, practice, practice. And to be very careful in your selection of school, because that is very important in the direction that you want to go. Make sure you study with someone that you get along with and respect and feel like they can help you. As a matter of fact, I always liked a lot of students that want to go to either NEC or BU, they come to take a lesson with me, and I always make a joke to myself that they're auditioning
yes,
me
they
for,
are.
Right. for the job. But I think that's very smart, and I think it makes sense, because there are, you know, just in life, there are people that you get along with mm-hmm. and those that you don't. So you want to, I mean, this is a 4-year commitment for the most part, and you want to make sure it's someone that you really want to work with.
Well, on that note, I would ask you about being a woman in an all practically male-dominated orchestra in terms of getting along and surviving. I mean, you certainly did, of course, because of your talent, but are there any other little tricks of the trade?
Well, actually, I don't think it's so much male-dominated anymore. When I joined the BSO, I was one of 4 women at the time. And now I think there are about 40.
Yes. Well, that's true. I guess you were in those years, what is it, 40 years ago? Well,
40 years, from 1969 to 2009. So that isn't quite an issue anymore. However, the African-American component of
yes.
my career has not grown that much. As a matter of fact, when I joined the BSO, there was just me. And about 20 years later, a young cellist joined the orchestra. And after I left, he's now there by himself. So we went.
I was going to ask you about that. It is an issue. And, you know, you had a double barrel there, being a woman, also being African-American. But you did go to South Africa, and you made a documentary. Was it for WGBH?
Yes, it was sponsored by WGBH and the Museum of Afro-American History. And we went to Africa in 1997.
Mm.
And it was aired on GBH and actually PBS stations across the country for 3 years, from 1998 to 2001. And the idea was to do some research about the origin of the harp.
Really? Is there a connection? Well, I guess there's a connection everywhere, I think, with the harp.
There is a connection everywhere. And, I mean, in working with ethnomusicologists the idea, of course, is the harp came from the bow and arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And mankind originated in Africa, and so the bow and arrow originated there, and that's why you see in the Egyptian caves and back in Uganda, you see very primitive-looking harp-like instruments and lyres and so forth. So that's the route that we were going from the bow and arrow forward.
So, but what was the idea of this? Was it just, in a sense, to really do some, you know, research, or was it also to get another idea across?
Well, the idea was, I mean, what GBH and the museum wanted to do was to do a film about me and showing my roots, and it's called Ann Hobson Pilot, A Musical Journey. And so in conjunction with that, showing my roots and the roots of the harp, showing that, like, when I was coming along, as we just said, I was one of only or very few African-Americans playing the harp at that time. And yet, if you look at the history of the instrument, that's where it originated.
Really, it's interesting because, of course, you always think of the harp with the biblical days.
Absolutely.
And of course, the African harp, though, had it's a different harp, obviously. And of course, we're talking about the modern harp now. But I just wondered again, this issue of being African American. It's a problem to some degree, but certainly not in any way anything like it was when you started.
Oh no! Yeah, I definitely think that it's not such an issue anymore. I mean, just about when I was coming along, the orchestra started using screens so that people were auditioning behind a screen.
Yes.
When I auditioned for Boston, it was behind a screen, and that is to eliminate or to limit discrimination as much as possible. The years before that, a conductor had the ability to bring over a friend from wherever to just put them in place. There was not the strict auditioning process that is in place now. So that has made things better, and I think you are finding that that's one reason why you find more women in symphonies now, and also other people of color, Asians and whatever. And,
yes, a lot of them.
So, yeah, I think that things are changing gradually.
Yes, well, I think they're gradual, but they're certainly very, very different. I think the young people today have no idea of what was going on even in the 50s,
absolutely.
You know, before civil rights. So,
right.
But again, it's unfortunate that there is that issue even now. Whether I heard of a very bad situation with a trombonist, a female in one of the European orchestras, that auditioned behind a screen, and she was outstanding. And when they found out she was a woman, they tried to stop the process, though, and that was not very long ago, so I guess we still got that to battle. But in any case, now is your time to probably do solo work and perhaps concertize, is that right?
Yes, exactly. I enjoy playing chamber music a great deal, so I'm doing a lot of that, and I'm going to champion the John Williams Concerto. I'm playing in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania.
Oh, with the college there?
Yeah, for on July 7th.
Okay, I was going to ask you what your schedule is
I have several chamber music concerts planned, and as I said, I'm going to start trying to play John's piece whenever possible. But that'll be actually the first performance since the one with the BSO last year.
Are you intending to record that?
We've been talking about it. John Williams wants it recorded. I want it recorded, but it's a matter of finding the time and the money to get it done.
To get support for it. Mm-hmm.
And support for it, yeah.
Well, we'll be waiting.
Okay.
And when you release that album, we'll play it right here on WRTI.
Wonderful.
And we thank you so much for finding the time to speak with us. I look forward to your concert. Hopefully, we'll try to get over there to Settlement to hear you play and meet you in person.
And I look forward to meeting you, too.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ms. Anne? Hello? Oh, she hung up.